Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Coaching Call podcast. On this podcast, we'll cover various types of coaching by trainers in sports, martial arts, fitness, and business. We'll discuss each coach's methods to getting the most out of their respective athletes or clients and how they attempt to change the platform in which they coach. Join us on a fun adventure as we discuss unique coaching styles. Coaching is a universal part of how we get others to get something done. Join your host, Rafael, and his guests on this unique journey in coaching.
Hi, I'm Sifu Rafael, and this is the Coaching Call podcast. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. This episode was made possible by listeners like you. Romana, thank you so much for joining me on Coaching Call. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me. It's so exciting to be on your show.
Yes, I am excited that you're here. We're going to have so much fun, but I want you to tell my audience where you're coming in from.
I'm located in Salzburg, Austria, in Europe. And this is, for Americans, it's a tiny town. It's about 160,000 people living there. Loads of culture and culture festival, classic music is going on here.
You said that's where Mozart was born, right?
Yes. And I can tell you, but I won't tell here. I mean, I don't go outside the house and tell it. He didn't like the city.
Oh, really?
He went to Vienna when he was grown up, and he like left no good whenever he talked about Salzburg and its inhabitants.
But that's back then. Now it's better. You have such an interesting story. I definitely want to dive into who Romana is. Do me a favor. Your name, your last name, is it? I don't want to mess it up. Would you mind saying it for us?
It's Hasenöhrl. And you can't pronounce Hasenöhrl. The last part like Earl of Grey, the T. Then it's always right.
That's a great antidote to how to say your name. Thank you for that. So, Romana, growing up, I want to know, I always want to know, it's very intriguing to me on the influences that every one of us has had in our lives, especially when we're little, right? Who would you say was some of the biggest influences when you were maybe under 10 years old? And then we'll go up in age.
Big influence when I was under 10 was my kindergarten host, you say it like that, the lady who like teaches the very tiny kids. She came from Ireland and she taught us counting in English. And I was like, wow, I loved it. I think at this very small age, no, you don't say small age. However, my love for the English language started then. And the love for traveling, because she told us she's not from here. And I grew up in a small village. We were all farmers' kids. So we couldn't imagine there's somebody here who's not from here. That's
right.
That was that Aunt Angela, we called her. And the next person was my English teacher, Agnes, and I still am in contact with her. She was my English teacher from 10 to 14. Right. And she saw that I'm good in the language, I love it, and she made it happen that I could go to England for 2 weeks in the summer holidays when I was 13. And this was my first trip all alone. So traveling to England for 2 weeks, staying there with the family, that was, oh God, that like made, that changed my life. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I can only imagine. At 14, that's pretty cool.
14, yeah. And I still remember that because there was a contest and the best student could go to England. And I was very good in English, so I made it. And before the contest, right, I was, please let me go. Yeah, I want to be the winner. You always want to be the winner at that age. And then I won. And then I realized that now I have to go to England all by myself. Right. And I was scared like hell. I was praying every night, dear God, please make that horse my best friend has to go. But God didn't listen to me.
No. So how was that trip for you? I mean, you were there by yourself. And you went to live with a family for 2 weeks. How was that trip? What would you say were some of the lessons you learned during those 2 weeks?
The first was that was an organization. So it happened like that. My parents like brought me to the railway station and I got one of those huge signs around my neck with a big letter on it, which said, this student goes there, right? So they put you in a bus and then in a train and then on a plane. And that was the first kind of strange experience for me to be a number, right? So, right. Oh my God, what if they mix it up and I land in
what number wherever. Were you? What number were you?
I guess it was a J or a K. They put letters on it for the number. Cities. Okay. And I went to Manchester, so I got a plane from Vienna to Manchester. That was the first flight of my life, and I was, I knew I wanna become a flight attendant. After that flight, I knew I wanna become a flight attendant. Never happened, but that was like, oh my God, they can fly everywhere, they can fly every day, and they are so nicely dressed and everything. So that was wow. And with the family, first of all, I realized that you can speak English, but nevertheless not understand every other English-speaking person. Because in UK, northern part, that's a very strange accent for me. So the first 2 days I had real problems getting what they wanted, what they said to me. Right. And we mixed up so many things that... just funny. But then the girl, so in that family there were two small boys and one girl my age, so we really got best friends, and that was a good experience. And what I still have in my life, and I love that very much because I'm not in contact with them anymore, but they took me to Bronte country. That is a part where the Bronte sisters, who wrote, for example, the novel Wuthering Heights, and I read it at that age. That's old English literature. And I loved that book so much. So they took me there where those authors grew up. That was a family of authors, female authors. And I love that so much that every time I go to the UK, I stop there. I go there again. And visit the museum where they grow up. And, that's amazing. And I still love that novel very much. So for all listeners, Wuthering Heights, take a look at it.
Yes. And if you get a chance, definitely go there, right?
Yeah, go there.
Yeah,
it's wonderful.
So that's where the after 14.
Yeah.
After 14, you went there, you had some great experiences, and something that you always kept with you, right? Who influenced you when you were a young adult? Would you say?
Sounds or may sound weird, but it then became the music and literature.
Nothing weird about that.
That was not a person, right? But for example, the music of Bruce Springsteen, I loved it. And I started translating those words because you don't get it if you just listen when you're that age and it's not your mother tongue. And that was going deep. And then I had those big dreams. I want to travel the US. I want to go to America. That's like for European kids. It's like America. That's so big. Yeah, you want to go there. So, and the other thing was that I started reading a lot. And I, in that age, that was early, about the age of 12, I was convinced that I want to become a writer. I knew I will become a writer, and I just didn't know how to write a book. That was the problem. I didn't know whom to ask, though, because in a farmer's family, that's not the topic of the day to talk about book writing. So I wrote a letter to the radio station. I thought they have to know. I mean, they're reading the news every day. They must be so clever. But they didn't answer that letter. That's really? So mad. Yeah. So then I stopped my writing career for a few years. But still, those books I've been reading, and mostly the music was what made my whole thinking, dreaming, and my visions. So I knew I want to travel the world. I want to see where people live, how they talk, what they do all day. Like, that was so inspirational. And when I became 21, I bought my first motorbike and instantly founded a gang. Of course, you have to found a gang. So there were three of us, motorbikers, and we traveled Europe. We went everywhere by motorbike. Yeah. And we were students. We didn't have much money. So we just grabbed our sleeping bags and a tiny tent, and off we went for weeks. That was amazing. Yeah, weeks. We went to France, to Spain, to Great Britain, Czech Republic, to Italy, to Greece, even.
So how did you survive? How did you even eat? What did you guys do to make some money?
First of all, when I started studying, I worked for a foundation who care about kids from not so good homes. Meaning, you know, if the police has to come because there's parents who are drinking or doing wrong to the kids. So there were, that was an organization who takes care of them, puts them into like small groups, and they were taken care by social workers. And one of them was me. So that's how I organized and paid for my studies. And I did that for 3 years and realized that that really burns you out. You see so many bad things, and I knew I have to change something. So I did a teacher's academy in these days, and I did all the exams and everything, but then thought, okay, I'm not ready. I was 21 becoming a teacher. I want to do something more, some more studies. So I started studying politics and journalism, and got a cab driver, because in these days you really could make good money with it. And so I was driving at nighttime and studying at daytime. And that led to, you really could earn good money in these days. That was the 90s, right? And that made us able to start traveling on a real good level. So when we had those, we have 4 weeks off in February. We went to, like the States. I've been to the States for 8 times. And in autumn, in September, we went by motorbike, and the rest of the time studying and driving a cab. So it was great times.
So you definitely explored, that's without a doubt, right?
Yeah.
What would you say was one of the things that you saw when you were on your motorbike that really resonated with what you were doing?
The one of the most, the greatest experiences was that whenever I got on the motorbike and was driving, I started creating stories. It was as if my creative part just like got switched on within
up.
The moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nice. I thought that this is the case for every motorbiker. I thought they all have that because it was so normal for me. And in the evenings, I sat in front of the tent and wrote down my stories. We didn't have a computer then, right? We just wrote by hand. And one day, one of my motorbiker friends said, "Hey, what's that with you going on every day in the afternoon? You're getting so damn slow. You're just slowing down and slowing down. What's happening?" And I said, "Oh, that's the time where the biggest parts of the stories happen." And he said, "Which stories?" And I said, "Yeah, you know those stories bikers have when they are riding the bike?" And he said, "What?" I was like, "You don't have it? No, what are you talking about?" I was, "No, everybody has to have it." So I really couldn't understand but that this is kind of a gift, and it is. So still nowadays, when I have one of those very famous writer's blocks, every writer knows them, I just get on my motorbike, and it's still the same motorbike I had in these days. So the
really? Wow.
Yeah, that's how old is she now? Oh, but that's 40 years.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness.
Built that's in 1982.
Taking good care of it, right? You, taking good care, making maintenance, that's important.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You decided to start writing. What was, and oh my gosh, you have written 10 books. Congratulations. That is a big feat. But let me ask you, what was your first book on and what motivated you? What moment in time did you say, "I have it, I'm going to write this book"? And what was it on?
Oh, that's the best story. After my studies and after being a cabbie, I got a dream job at Austria's biggest broadcasting company. So every student who studies journalism wants to go there. And I got that job as a director's assistant, beginning with that, and then doing camera work and everything for big shows, for news shows, whatever you can imagine. And after 17 years, we got a new boss. And he was not a good guy.
No.
And I'm not a young girl, and I wasn't in these days. I was 44. So when he tried to cut our salaries down and doing some stuff which was not okay, I told him what I thought about it.
Right.
And he fired me instantly.
Really?
So, wow. And that was the weirdest situation of my life, because that guy didn't even talk to me, but sent me a letter. And I was in Greece at this time. And when I got back, the letter got returned because I wasn't home.
Right.
So I went to work as usual, and I was the only person not knowing I've been fired.
Oh my gosh.
Starting that camera work in the studio, like new studio camera. Right. And they were all asking me, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yeah, why not? I mean, I've been to Greece for 5 weeks. Everybody would be okay then." Right. I didn't get it for over 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, nowadays that's so funny. But on that day, I was devastated, of course.
Of course.
That was, wow. So I had, I guess, 2 more weeks to go, and then that was it. I thought I will find a job instantly because I'm highly educated and know a lot, and blah, 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 but I didn't. And they told me that at the age of 44, it's almost impossible to find a job in the media industry. They want young people there, right? That was the next part where I thought, no, that's not true. Oh my God, I'm old. No, I'm old.
That's what they thought. They thought you were old, but you're not old.
So the only chance I had was getting self-employed, so founding my own company. And as I studied astrology next to my work. I love that. And so I started the company as an astrologer and copywriter, because I knew I'm a good writer. I haven't written a book yet, but and then I was like, yeah, that was rock bottom time because of course I didn't have enough clients to make my living and it was really hard. And one day I like had coffee with my aunt and I told her all that stuff that worried me. I'm running broke. I can't pay my rent anymore for 4 months to go. Then that was it. And she said, "Hey, listen, you're such a good writer. Why don't you just write a book? You've got enough time now." I thought, yeah, that's true. So we sat there and I said, "Well, which topic could I write about?" And I don't know how I came up with that. I thought a garden book because I love gardening.
Right.
And so we discussed that because there are loads of garden books out there. Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh, why don't I write a garden book for people who are broke? Mm. So you garden in old shopping bags. You don't have to buy those expensive flower pots and stuff. And I instantly started doing that, trying if it works. And then I did a fictional book writing course, an online course, because I really didn't know how to start.
Right.
And that guy was amazing. He told us everything, how to pick a title, a catchy title, how to organize everything, and how to write a proper email to a publisher.
Mm.
And then that's really when the miracle happened. I wrote 12 emails and 2 publishers wanted to have me.
Oh, nice.
And that is a miracle. I still get goosebumps because that's something for a new author that very seldom happens.
Mm.
And so I got that first book over here. You see here are the shopping bags.
Oh, there you go. there you go. That's pretty cool. Very cool.
Yeah, I picked the publisher I liked best. And they got me on the contract. I loved my work and my energy and my marketing strategies and everything. Right, and I did 2 more books with them. And one got translated to English.
Oh,
I'm
really
very proud of that. Yeah.
Very cool. And what is the name of that book?
That's Natural Dying with Plants, meaning you put the color on that textile stuff with flowers, buds and leaves and everything.
Mm.
And I did that with my auntie because she's a professional in that. So she told me everything and I wrote it down and took the pictures.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So that's how the whole thing started.
Wow. And it was because you had coffee with her and she said something which triggered something in you. She said, "You have the time."
Yes.
Right. So you have the time. You know, I got to tell you, I'm loving your energy, your laughter. Everything about you is positive, great vibes. And that's because you're a laughter yoga, aren't you?
Yeah, I am a certified laughter yoga trainer. That's true.
Tell me about that. That's so interesting.
It is. And again, this... that was an epiphany that started with that losing my job because I always have been a very energetic and happy person.
Right.
And when I had my last day in work, one of the radio people, because we were TV and radio people there, he came up to me and said, "You know what I'm gonna miss most? You're laughing. So is it okay for you if I like record you? And you laugh and I keep it." And I was like, first of all, you have to tell me a joke. Come on. By saying that, I started laughing and he like switched on record. And we had so much fun with that. And then I realized because another guy came by and said, "You still are laughing. I mean, your life isn't funny at all at the moment, right?" And I said, "You know what? They don't get my laughter.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I give away. They can take my hope and my whatever, but I never give away that laughter." And that like made me think of, there are people who stop laughing when something like that happens to them. And I don't. that doesn't mean I don't care. I was devastated, right. But still, I think, why should I give away that laughter and that energy? And yeah. A few years later, I met the lady. She's a yoga trainer and laughter yoga trainer, and we had some fun. And she said, "Oh, I love your laughing. Would you like to come to one of my courses? I think you're gonna love it." So I went there and realized, that's how I can use my laughter to support other people who have lost it, that energy, that laughing. Yeah. And laughter yoga is like, it's based on the theory, it's not only a theory, it's true, that your brain cannot know the difference between you're really having fun or are happy, right. Or you're just acting like that. Your brain can't tell the difference. Meaning, it doesn't mean that you first have to be happy and then you start laughing. It's the other way around. You start laughing and then you get happier. And that's what we do now. So
that's beautiful.
In those courses, I just show people how to do. There are some tricks and like tiny exercises, and you do them together. And first of all, most people are very shy. They're like, after 10 minutes, it's done. They're like,
they let it out, right? It opens them up, if you will, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That is awesome. You know, this morning I had a show, and I was talking about being down and being lonely. And how one of the things that I do every day before I go to sleep, I laugh. I watch something or I say something or I kid around with my girlfriend. We both laugh before we go to sleep. And it's just so relaxing, right? It's such a great vibration, if you will, to have that laughter, to have that joy. Especially before you go to sleep.
Yes, it releases everything, right? Mm-hmm. All that heavy load of the day, it's just gone. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing, totally.
It is, it is.
Totally. So there's something else that you, and I want to know, when did you start this? You talked about going on your motorbike and traveling across Europe, but now... You do something else, and you do for a couple of months too, right? 3 to 4 months in your old Volkswagen camper?
Yeah.
and you just go, right?
I
for that long,
go.
Huh?
Yeah. That was another present I got from that being fired. Because before in Austria, we are so lucky. We have 5 weeks of paid vacation.
That's beautiful.
That's amazing. But still, I always had the feeling that's not enough. And we have one of those very high mountains. If you go from Austria south, you always have to cross the Alps. And every time we had to come back after 4 or 5 weeks, I had that feeling, one day I will decide when I go back. Not because the time's over, right? I was like, And I promised myself one day I will travel from France to Austria. You're along the Mediterranean, that sea, that
the Mediterranean that ocean. Sea. Yeah.
And then I don't go left back to Austria, but right down to southern Italy. That's what I promised myself. So, I bought that old Volkswagen van. I have a picture of it too. Right here.
Nice.
Yeah. Because my first novel, it's about traveling. And so I put that old.
And there's
Volkswagen.
A book. You wrote a book about it. That's beautiful.
And I bought it in 2009 because I realized I had a bad accident skydiving. So I broke my spine and took ages to heal. And from that day on, sleeping in a tent was a real pain.
Right.
I couldn't get up in the morning. So I told my partner at these days, you know what? This will be the last vacation in a tent. I know it. And then I bought that Volkswagen and I restored it because that's a very old car. It's built in 1985. So again, some work to do. And after I've been fired, it took me 2 years to realize that now I could do that. I'm my own boss now. I work on the computer. I can work from everywhere. In 2015, I got some more checks done on the car because you want to be sure it doesn't break down. And then I started a vacation. I mean, not a real vacation because I was working on my trip. But I started at the beginning of September and it took me 4 months till I came back. And I exactly did that. I went to Luxembourg, France, Spain, then back to France. And then I waved to the Alps and said, I go that direction.
I'll see you later. Very nice.
And that's how that started. And then I got that tiny dog because all people said, don't travel alone, take
Hello,
a dog.
Cutie
and I said,
pie,
I don't want to be in a small van with a German shepherd.
So I just said, hello, cutie pie, because you showed us your dog, right?
Yeah.
What kind of dog is that? What kind of dog
it's
is that?
It's a Chihuahua.
Oh, okay.
And her name,
bring
her
him
name
up.
Is
Let's
Vanda.
See him. Let's take a look at him.
Oh, my God.
Hi. He's like, who is talking? Very cool. And he's sitting on your lap and she's calm and relaxed, right?
She is. She's very used to those interviews. Okay. So whenever I put on my headset and switch on that ring light, then she knows, relaxing time, that will take her an hour. Stay there.
I'm going to sit on Romana's lap. Got it.
That's cool. And so she travels with me since 2016.
Oh.
And we went to France and southern Italy, and in 18, where did it go? 18, it was Greece. So it's all around Europe, every year another location. And I'm, of course, writing on my books when I'm traveling, because then that creativity thing is switched on again.
I'm somewhat creative, and you just gave me an idea for your next book, for your 11th book. Can I share it with you?
Yeah.
Through the Eyes of My Chihuahua.
Oh my God, I love it.
Because that is a really well-traveled dog.
Yes.
So you can write the book Through the Eyes of My Chihuahua, and that's the title. You're welcome. And then you can write maybe what the Chihuahua. So now when you go on your next one, you got to start saying, if I was my Chihuahua, how would I see the world? How would I see what's going on?
That's
Through the
so
Eyes of My Chihuahua.
Funny. Oh my God. I
would that be a great book? I think that'd be a cool book.
Oh, absolutely. I have that picture now that I met a wonderful person in France, and we got big friends, and he has a Labrador called Muffin. So that's a huge dog, Muffin. Right? And we all think that Muffin is so cute. Mm. And the moment you said, what would your Chihuahua think? I got that, I hate Muffin. She doesn't like him. Everybody says he's cute, but I think he's an animal.
Your Chihuahua doesn't like nothing.
No. No.
You know what? Inspiration can come from anywhere, especially when you're traveling, right? You probably meet all kinds of people. You just talked about your friend from France, where because you're a writer, you're always looking for the story, right? You're always looking for that inspiration. And this is why I love talking to people, because everyone I ever speak to, they teach me something. And you're teaching me something today that besides the laughter, the understanding that when something goes bad, you don't have to stay in that moment you can learn and adapt and move on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again and again and again, because we all know that things can happen, right? Life is not always nice. But yeah, at the end of the day, as you said, there should be that moment where you laugh and let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if you have a bad day, especially when you have a bad day, you should laugh at night before you go to sleep.
Yeah. Treat yourself.
Because you don't want to go to sleep with those negative thoughts in your mind, because they're just going to keep going in your brain, and you're not going to sleep well. So
yeah, that's it. That's the thing. And
it's washing your mind, right?
It is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you have those bad dreams if you don't clear it, right? And because your brain keeps on working, it wants to like do everything, finish everything.
Yeah. It's like the people that watch a scary movie and then go to sleep. Yeah, you may have a nightmare.
Yeah. You buy it with the movie.
All of a sudden, you're part of the movie in your dream. So you're doing a lot. You're traveling 3 to 4 months a year. But you're traveling, you're vacationing, but you're working. But it's really not work, is it?
Yeah, it depends on sometimes as I do some I do SEO work, search engine optimization as well, because they need texts there. And then it's work, but still, I think, first of all, it's amazing. You can make your living with writing. Yes. I know many, many people who want to do that and can't. And then they have to do some job they don't like and next to it try to write. So I'm in a real lucky, luxury situation. And the other thing is that sometimes I think, okay, now I do 2 hours of like SEO copywriting. That's okay. Right. If you sit in front of the seaside and you hear the ocean, I mean, poo.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so I just put up on the screen, I put your website, which is you help writers, I guess, get out of that mental block, if you will, right?
Yes.
And you help them get along and move on, right? So your website is writers-workshops.mailchimpsites.com.
Yes, and, so you and I also promise. I will get a better URL.
You will along the ways, but that's what it is now. But you also have a course on there that you help people to, I guess, really get started, because you were at that point where you didn't know how to start, right? So you're helping people, and your course is it ongoing? How often do you have it? Tell us a little bit about that.
I came up with it because another writer, she asked me, did you know how to write a non-fictional book? I mean, that's not given. And I said, I booked one of those great courses. I give you the link, and I looked for it, and they don't do it anymore.
Mm.
And I was, oh my God, they don't do it anymore. So then I thought, okay, then I do it. Let's start with free webinars. So what I do there is I created a 7 steps program to like really do the structure work, because at the beginning it's just that. Do the structure work, find the title, do the chapters, and make clear not only your readers, but first of all yourself, why you are the authority who can write this book. So it's very much about what you just said, overcoming that, oh, I'm not good enough, or who will read my book, and all that stuff. And I also make clear, because there are so many programs out there where they promise that people will become bestseller authors. And I never promise that, because I tell people, listen, I can give you all the tools. I can give you all the steps, like I have 10 steps of the biggest mistakes writers make when they're writing the first book, because I know all about it.
Of course.
But nevertheless, if I tell you everything, you still have to write your book. That's what you have to do. That's what I cannot do.
Yeah, no, you can't write the book for them, because then why would they even bother, right? One of the things that we had, Mona, she came on and she said, one of the things is laughter. A great tie-in with your show earlier this morning, so she probably watched the show. But yeah, you know, when we think about writing a book, I believe that every single person in the world should write a book. And it should, one book in particular, it should be about your life. And it should be about your childhood, how you overcame certain things in your life. And then even if nobody ever buys the book, but you pass it down from generation to generation, so people 5 generations from now can know about you, your life, and whatever insights you have, because those insights may help some of your great-great-great-great-grandchildren, right? Or even your brother's great-grandchildren, whatever it is. But I believe in that particular book that we should all write a book, right? Mm-hmm. One that even if nobody buys it, but it's a family book, right? Because it's, I always love it when I hear the stories of my great-grandmother, my great-grandfather, or my, you know, people I never met, but there are stories about them. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But nobody wrote about them. It's just hearsay, right? And then what happens is when those people stop talking about it, nobody's going to know about it anymore.
Yeah, it's gone.
Right? It is gone.
You really speak from my heart. That's exactly the thing what I tell my students when they come up with, you know, I'd love to write down the story of my life, but who's going to read it? And I say, don't care. If there is one person out there who tells you that your book has changed their lives, then it's perfect, right?
That
it's
is perfect.
Just about one person. And one person will read it for sure. So I have some students who come up with those life stories, and I think that's so great. That's so wonderful. As you say, my grandmothers, for example, grandfathers, they didn't write it down. But of course, nowadays, it's so interesting. I did interviews with my grandmother and
did
asking
you?
Her. Wow. Yeah. Because she was so funny. I got her laughter. It's exactly the same like hers.
That's
and
awesome.
She always started like, when I asked her, for example, hey, how was dating at your time? I mean, she was born in 1926. How was dating in the 30s or 40s? Right. And she's always like, oh my God, what do you ask her? That starts laughing and laughing. But then told me that, of course, that wasn't like it's nowadays. You didn't have cars. You had to walk to the cinema.
Mm.
1.5 hours walk.
Wow.
And of course, your parents were very clear about whom you are allowed to go with, because they couldn't track you, right?
So,
all those stories, I love it. And those special things, being a like pre-war kid, as she was, and then the whole time before the war in Europe, I mean, everything was destroyed. So how did they deal with it? Was normal for them? So nowadays, I understand after all those talks why my grandma never threw away some food. That wasn't good anymore, but she still ate it because she couldn't throw it away. That is such a deep going memory of these days.
Yeah.
And it's so good to know about that. Yeah. So that's treasure.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, my sister just wrote a book based on my mom.
Wow.
And it's in Spanish and English because I'm Colombian, right? But she's, because I also draw, she's asking me to do the artwork for the cover. Mm-hmm. And she had an artist, and the artist was going to do it because my sister lives in a different part of the U.S. And then I said, okay, go with your artist. And then just the other day, she called me up. She goes, I don't want to go with the artist. I want to go with you because you knew mom. The artist didn't know mom. So this is my thought of the drawing that I want you to do of mom. I said, okay. And it's based on a saying that my mom used to always say. I said, okay, I can do that. No problem. So now, I'm tasked with doing the artwork for my mom's book, or my sister's book about my mom, which is interesting because my sister is a professor, and she's a professor in Spanish, but obviously she speaks English. So she wants to have it in both languages. So she's already written the book, and her publicist said, you need to do it in English and Spanish. Wow. Because you have this community of people who know you in the Spanish speaking realm, but then you have the American people who know you in the American, but it's a great story. So you should be able to tell it. So that's pretty cool when you think about it, right? Writing about someone in your life that impacted your life, right?
Yeah. So. That's so cool. And so many things come up then, right? You talk to people, you bring up the big memories again.
Oh, yeah. 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 You know, one of the things is every night I think of my mom, my dad, my brother. He passed when he was 42, too young. But they're always in my mind. You know, I always pass their picture. Their pictures in my house, I always look at them, and I'm like, so every night, one of my gratitudes is the fact that I knew them, that they were in my life. So if I was able to talk to any one of my ancestors and interview them just the way I'm doing to you, my God, what a gift that would be, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That's I'm so glad I could do that. My grandma passed away a few years ago, and she was 94.
Oh, wow. And nice.
Still, I was so angry. She promised she would get 100. And I was like, I had to say that at the ceremony, like, Grandma, I'm not happy here. Because you promised. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But listen, that's a great life that she probably had. Yes. You know, ups and downs like all of us, you know. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you were able to ask how I was dating, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And all that stuff, right? I wanted to know how was packaging? Where did you get the milk? I know that we didn't have milk bottles at these days. Right. So how did you get it? So yeah, she told me about those things. You went to the farmer and picked it up. That was
I had one of those. I had one of those big milk containers. Yeah. And it was pretty cool. They were really, and they're solid. They were heavy too.
Oh yes, they were.
They were very heavy.
And all stuff like that. I really loved her stories. Yeah.
So you're a storyteller, right? Because you've written 10 books, and you told me your books are in German, right?
Yes, they are, with the one exception of the translation. Right. They are in German, and I've got one novel. The others are non-fictional, but I'm working on my second novel now, and I'm realizing that this is really where my heart belongs. So that is just that slight difference in feeling. So when I'm working on a non-fictional book, I love it. Of course, I pick topics love. But that novel writing is very, very special. Even when thinking of, okay, I make year plans, like this I can do there and there and there. So I know my next like novel writing episode will be in April. I'm traveling again then. And when I think of it, that's like that feeling, your heart opens. The world is big again. Like you were a kid, like big world. And you can create the story of the person who wants to be written. And with this second novel, I even had that experience that some writers talk about, that in the first novel, a person appears and he just appears and I couldn't get off him. So he wants to be written very clearly. He wants to be written. He wants to have his own story. And now it seems to me like, yeah, I mean, I know exactly how he is. I know his whole biography. Uh-huh. And it's my, yeah, I have to write his story. Yeah. Sometimes when I have no time for writing. Story, but
it's his story, but it's really your story, isn't it?
Yes.
Because he was born here. He was born in your mind, right? Yeah. So that's pretty incredible. And when you can take something that, and whatever his story is, I'm sure it's part of you, right? Because for you to even think of it, it's you, right?
Yeah.
But you gave him his own character. You gave him his own biography, if you will, right? You gave him his own details. You probably even have a image of him, right? So that's pretty cool.
That is. Sometimes when I have no time for writing, that picture comes up in my mind, like there's a bus station and Frank is waiting there. He's just waiting for me to carry on writing.
I love it. I love it. So your workshops, what do you do in your workshops? And you said you have 10 tips. Would you mind sharing one tip for somebody who's trying to start writing? One, one is all we need.
One, I think it's the most important tip is don't talk about your book project with everybody. Because I know that nowadays many, many coaches, and they are right. They say, if you have a big vision, tell people, because then you get the drive to carry on. That is true. The moment you tell it, it's getting from a thought to a like solid thing. That's true. But what happens with book projects most of the time is that for sure you will find one person who tells you, and who do you think wants to read that book? And all of a sudden, your newborn author personality is like that tiny. It fits under a carpet. And then all your tiny voices in your head start working and talking, right? Yeah, he's sure. For example, that book about that topic, there are so many books out in the market. Do you really think you can sell it? Don't care. Don't sell it. Give it away for free or whatever. I don't care about that. And that's what I tell them. Be very, very careful and treat your book project, your newborn idea, like a tiny plant in spring. You put that seed into the ground and then that tiny, tiny thing comes out one day. And you don't want to put it into broad sunlight or rain or hail. You like... treat it like a baby. And that's what you should do with your book project as well. Be very clear whom you talk about it with. Pick one best friend, or for example, what I do is I do one-to-ones writer's coaching, meaning we meet once per month, and that author tells me where he struggles or where they struggle, where the problems are, the challenges. And I try my best to help. And they send me their drafts and I read them and tell them, hey, listen, in that storyline, the storyline is broken. What happened? So we talk about that. And if you find a person like that, like me, that's good. Do it with that person. And don't tell like all persons you meet, I'm writing a book now, because some of them won't understand. And some of them are maybe jealous and say something bad just because they're jealous or they don't care. So that's, I think, the most important thing. And I had that experience myself with the garden book, because there were friends who said, garden books, you are not even a gardener. Who will buy it? And I was like, but I've been gardening for 40 years. My grandma told me everything. I'm gardening since the age of four. So of course I'm a professional in my way. But from that day on, I knew, you don't tell everybody. They destroy your power, right?
Yeah.
When you finished your first draft, okay, then you can say it because it's written. Hey, you get another, you redo it, and someday you have the final draft and good. But be careful with that tiny, that tiny personality of your project.
I agree 100%, because a lot of people may not understand, and a lot of people, either they're jealous because not of you, but because they're not doing it right. Because they're like, if I put them down, then they're not going to excel higher than me, so we can stay here together, we're happy here, right? But if you go here, that's going to put pressure on me. I got to elevate. So a lot of people don't want to go higher. They don't want to make things better. So they're like, what are you going to do that for?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they put you down because they're really putting themselves down.
Yeah. So that's the first tip. And I've got loads of them. I always have to pack them into 1.5 hours, because my free webinars are for 90 minutes. And then I try to pack everything in it. And even for the seven steps, we not only talk about techniques of writing or structuring, but also about self-development, the work you can do when you want to become a writer. We have to be very kind to ourselves. Most people forget about that. They have that 8-to-5 job, then they have the writing project. They work at nighttime. Sometimes they get very exhausted. And then I tell them, did you take care of yourself? Did you take a day off?
Right?
Or buy yourself an ice cream or like something that really makes you happy. Because otherwise you're losing that that good feelings you have about writing. We want that energy, and the reader gets it. That's the secret.
That's who you're writing for anyway, right?
Romana,
I gotta tell you, go ahead.
Love that when those students in my courses, they're like, oh wow, that's so simple, but I can do it and it helps. I love that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Great tips. And you know, it would be silly for somebody to not realize that you are in their corner. So I highly recommend everybody to go to your workshops. If you are thinking about writing a book, if you want to write your book, if you're not sure how to get started, visit my new and great friend, Romana, right? Her link is going across the screen. I'm going to put it in the show notes as well, so you can follow her. Go to her workshops. It's a great, I can tell you, just by your laughter alone, it shows you care and you want to help these people, because you're coming from a heart-centered place. You're coming with love and compassion And a lot of people don't do that. All they're looking for is the money, right? And that's why I started this show, to talk to people like you who make a difference in our world. So thank you for being on my show today. I really appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Thank you so much. Yes.
And I know we have another show in a couple of minutes where you're going to give a great tip for my other show. So I really appreciate you doing that as well. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes. So we'll see you, and I'll see you in a few minutes, right? Like two
Absolutely.
Minutes? Okay, perfect. Okay. Bye, everybody. Have an amazing, amazing rest of your day. And don't forget, next week, I have other great guests coming on. I look forward to everybody. By the way, Romana, I hope you can make it to New York in July. It's going to be July 13th through the 16th. We're having the Heroes Rising Summit. It's going to be a great time. A lot of great, amazing coaches and authors like you. So I look forward to seeing everybody there. Thank you. Bye-bye.